Hi there, I'm with Ryan Hall, manager of Holsworthy AFC. Sometimes I call it Holsworthy Town by mistake. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, all right.
All right there. So this is my first interview, and I don't know, is it your first, Ryan?
Yes, definitely my first, absolutely.
So if this is amateur hour, I always like under-promising and over-delivering, so let's under-promise. So just to let people know, I've been a follower of Holsworthy for just under a year, and you can read all about it and hear all about it in other podcasts and blogs. But Ryan very kindly agreed to be my first interview, so we'll give this a go, see where we go. And what I'm really looking for is more in, not blah 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 of results, but more what it's like to be a manager at step six, and see what sort of trials and tribulations you go through. You've been manager for 18 months, you tell me.
Yep, so took over sort of in the middle of the COVID period, after the previous manager left. That brought its own sort of trials and tribulations initially. It's been a long road, but it hasn't really been that long, but it has felt it with everything that's gone on in sort of that period of time.
So going straight off script here, how was it taking over in a COVID period?
Yeah, it was really difficult, especially the way that the club was left. We didn't sort of have many players, and then trying to get new players to the club was extremely difficult. We were lucky that myself and Lee, who run the team now, we did an under-18s team beforehand, so we could call on a few of those players to make the step up. But a lot of them had never played step six before. And it also meant getting a sort of a handful of players from Exeter, which, if you look at the geography, is a good 45 minutes to an hour's journey away from where we are. So it meant relying quite heavily on that sort of travel as well. And that was just initially just to be able to field a side. It quickly came together, to be fair. And the first sort of stint, which was ended due to COVID, we picked up some really good results and started to climb the table. But it was only when we started the last season that it really sort of found its feet. And we ended up doing really well with that basis of players.
Yeah, winning a cup, I remember. Really glad I couldn't be there for that, but never mind. So the last time I met you, you had COVID. So yeah. Intriguing thing of watching you manage a game from a car. Should I have said that you were there? But anyway, he did fully isolate, I must say. So the first question I sent through was, tell me a bit about your own football career. I have no idea where you played or what you did or whatever. I could have looked up and done the research, but I don't know if it's there. Who did you play for and how did you become manager at Holsworthy?
Yeah, so a little bit of like an up and down, because my parents moved. So originally I'm from Dorset. My sort of really young career sort of started out at a team called Shaftesbury, which is a small town in Dorset. Played for their youth system pretty much from under sevens up to sort of under 12s. And then my parents moved down to lovely sunny Devon. So, I joined a local youth team here for a couple of years before I moved back to Dorset, got shipped off to boarding school. To the same location which I came from, and I went back to play for the local sides down there. I was sort of in and out of trials with Bournemouth and Yeovil sort of when I was 14, 15, up to 16. And then I went over to Dorchester Town, which is probably where I spent a lot of my time after that for a good years. Playing in their under-18s and reserve sides, with a sort of couple of guest appearances for the first team in various cups. And then I decided to go to university, where I played in Bristol and just played for the university side there. And then I moved back to Devon, stuck uni for a year and then moved back to Devon and started playing for Holsworthy. Played under the manager that I, funnily enough, superseded. And became sort of very frustrated with my football, didn't really enjoy it, and then ended up dropping right off the face of the earth, really, and sort of playing local league stuff, almost like Sunday league level, to the point. And then I dislocated my knee and tore my ACL.
Oh, blimey.
A little five-a-side in those like sort of like goals, five-a-side tournaments. And that happened when I was 25. And then that was it. I haven't played since. So that's hence the young management. Because, I did my knee and I never really felt it was ever right enough for me to try and play again or at any sort of level, really, whether that's sort of lower level or push myself back up to go and play higher again. I think you find, like, when you play a lot lower level, you end up, the tackles are worse and people are a bit more agricultural about what they're doing, which kind of helps when you play up a high level. You don't tend to get that so much, but the speed and the physicality of it, I just couldn't do it. So it was a time to call it on the head. And it also impacts your work. That was the other major thing for me. You know, I had lots of time off of work, and when you've got a mortgage to pay and you've got children to look after, you have to stop being a little bit selfish and focus on that as well. So the management side of it came into play then. I took over Holdsworthy under 18s, ran that for 2 years, and then had a year's break, and then came back to run it again with Lee. And then from there, it went from under 18 straight into the first team.
Wow, it's a bit of a journey.
Absolutely.
I had a friend of mine who played non-league for Barkingside, and he finished his career exactly the same way. He did an ACL. And never really got it repaired properly. He still thought he could play, and every time he did play, he ended up doing his knee again, even playing in goal for us in the five-a-sides once. So how did you sort of play with Dorchester. One of the questions that was coming to my head is, did you actually ever play against anyone famous?
I did, Charlie Austin.
Oh, we always like Charlie Austin for his missing that playoff one. Oh, I shouldn't have mentioned that, should I?
That was in a Dorset Senior Cup game, actually. So that was a bit of an eye-opener. He was only a young chap then, but he later went on to go straight to my local team or the team I support as well. So he moved straight to Swindon after that, which was, a bit of an experience. But, he was very good. And there was a couple of ex-pros that used to play for Dorchester as well. One that was really good was Nick Crittenden, who I believe played for Chelsea in sort of like the late 90s.
It's a name I recognise. I was thinking more, was he Swindon as well? But I don't know, we can look him up afterwards.
He probably might have done, but he started out at Chelsea and then he sort of like fell down.
One guarantee is my brother will know who he played for.
I'm pretty sure he played for Chelsea in like the late 90s and sort of filled his way down. But there was quite a few ex-pros in that Dorchester team.
So as you mentioned with mortgages and kids, obviously this job doesn't keep, you know, being Holdsworthy manager doesn't keep a roof over your head. So how do you manage that with your day job, basically?
Yeah, it's very difficult. My partner would like, oh God, she gives me grief all the time. But I'm quite lucky for who I work for now. He's the vice chairman of the football club. So, and his son plays in our team. So I don't do football stuff at work, but if I need the time off to be able to go to a game or if we're playing away a long way away, then, you know, that side of it is not a problem. Mm-hmm. But a lot of my evenings are taken up by messaging players and organising games and organising all the other stuff that a lot of players don't see. And a lot of people on the surface that don't see, it's even down to organising like drinks for the players, medical stuff. We're trying to convert our physio room at the moment. We're in there trying to plasterboard it. It's the things that they don't see, which we give up our evenings for. And I won't just be the only one that does it. There'll be lots of other managers all over the football pyramid that do the same in a non-league world. You can't just be a football manager. You have to be everything to everyone almost, because there just aren't the people within the clubs to be able to get the jobs done if you don't. It is very challenging, and I've got two young children as well, so trying to see them, you know, spend time with my partner and give football my everything is very difficult at times.
I just do not figure out managers or chairman. I just watch it at Phoenix as well. And I've seen you guys as well. It's just amazing how clubs like yours keep running. The first thing I always ask myself is, where's the money come from? But I don't really want to know the answer to that, to be honest. I think it's just the one thing I think that has amazed me about the sort of 9 months of football I've watched in some ways, just, you know, the facilities and the volunteers and how clubs have just kept running. It just amazes me. And just, you know, almost leaves me in contempt of the clubs bigger up, higher up the pyramid, to be honest with you, such as my own.
Yeah, it is. It's very difficult. I think we've got like a team of about 10 who do everything from maintenance, washing the kit.
Yeah.
You know, everything, the whole social media aspect, we're trying to get better on that as well. But I'm often having to tweet from the dugout, which is why our tweets aren't very good.
Anyone moan about that by any chance?
I mean, that's to the level that it gets to, like you're having to do that as well as manage a team at the same time, because of the importance of it, because it does bring in the sponsors. The sponsors want to be aired on social media and stuff if they're giving us money to keep us going. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they are, that is part of it, unfortunately.
Are you actually based in Holsworthy?
I do live in Holsworthy. Yeah, that's one bonus. I'm about a 5 minutes walk from the ground. So, that does save me a bit of time.
I had a feeling you'd live somewhere else. I thought you lived in Exeter, but there you go.
luckily for me, I am quite local. So,
yeah.
That works.
So we spoke over the summer when, for a few weeks, Holsworthy were going to be moved to the South West Peninsula West and the Cornwall League. And given Holsworthy's like based 2 miles, I think, from the border or whatever, most of us outside go, well, surely that's all right, isn't it? But maybe you can tell us why it wouldn't have been.
Yeah, I mean, from a completely selfish point of view, and from both myself and Lee, with us doing the under-18s, our team was based in the Devon and Exeter League. So the majority of players that we know to bring in or have an idea of, or the clubs where some of these players are all based in this East Division. And with us having 18 months in this East Division as well, we've worked out teams, how they play, they're sort of their better players, and all the sort of contacts that you make sort of being based in that league. Moving west is then almost starting afresh. And the commitment from our players, because as I previously mentioned, we've got, you know, 5 or 6 that travel from Exeter. It was almost going to treble their mileage, and being the club that we are, we don't have the funds to be able to you know, supplement that and pay the fuel money. We just can't. There is no way. And it meant that, you know, losing 6 potentially of your sort of key members of your squad would have made it really difficult for us this season. And then going into that side with Bude, is the problem you've then got is you're all trying to pull the same players into playing the same leagues from the same sort of pool. And there just aren't the amount, there just aren't the players within that sort of radius. You know, some will want to play more Cornwall side because they're sort of like Bude and South. But some of our players that are sort of in between might want to play the Exeter side because they're a little bit closer to Holsworthy. And if we both go in the West, then you're all fighting for the same sort of players.
Yeah.
And it makes it very difficult.
And of course, your league goes all the way out to, isn't it, Bridport now, isn't it, into the East?
It just touches into Dorset.
I've seen it with Phoenix, with a couple of the players have dropped. I've got one promotion from Step 5 last year, didn't go up with them because it was, you end up going down to places like Chichester, and they're now, it's a Kent league basically that they're in. I think it's something that before I followed non-league football, didn't have a clue about. My mileage, you know, when I used to play club cricket, we used to go quite a range of distances, but those were the days when young free and it wasn't so expensive to travel by car. So I was going to say, you're joint manager with Lee. How does that work?
Yeah, it works really well, to be fair. A little story, which I don't even know if you know, actually. My partner's dad is Lee. So it keeps it quite close in the family. But we have a very good mutual understanding, to be honest. I mean, we don't agree with everything, and quite rightly, but we're kind of a Jekyll and a Hyde. You know, if I'm not happy with the lads, and Lee will come in and calm it down, but vice versa, if he's not happy, I'll then come in and calm it down. So it does tend to work quite well. You know, it can be difficult when it's family and trying to keep that separate from football. But I think so far we've on the whole, we've achieved that, to be honest. But yeah, it is quite interesting.
And that I just went dark, by the way. I think we've been talking for 20 minutes and my screen went off. That's thrown me. So I didn't know that. So I'm probably not going to ask the question who's really in charge, because that's not fair. But if you do disagree, how do you, any sort of ways you sort it out?
I just think it's just, you know, I'm one of these people. I'll probably at first probably disagree, and then I'll think about it, and then I'll go, actually, yeah, no, he's probably right there. And I'll come back to it and go, yeah, no, we'll go with what you're saying. But sometimes it's just a case of, no, I've got that in my head, or Lee's got something in his head that he wants to go ahead with, and that's the end of that. And there isn't any sort of persuading but that's just part of it. That's football. There's lots of opinions, and sometimes your opinion is the one that's not going to count, but on the next, you know, the next time round, it does count, and perhaps Lee's doesn't, and that's how it works. But it so far, touch wood, it's worked well. So
I've seen three games, so I'm not exactly a massive expert of you, because I've watched as manager of three games. You all seem reasonably, certainly compared to Steve at Phoenix, you seem reasonably calm and collected and quite measured, whereas Steve, I think, can be I hope he's not, if he listens to me, doesn't think I'm being too over the top, a bit of a volcano at times. But he wasn't on Sunday, he was very calm on Sunday. But yeah, I've seen so many different types of managers. I do people watching it, and you guys seem very, very calm compared to most of the others I've seen, I've got to be said.
Yeah, I mean, we tend to be calm on the face of it. Behind closed doors, probably the lads would probably say a little bit different. But I mean, that's just the way that, you know, we want to run the club, and that's not to say that it's right or it's wrong. It's just, you know, the way that we choose to do it. We keep calm because ultimately we want to portray that everything's all right to the players, I suppose. And it's only when it gets into that enclosed environment where, you know, things do get a little bit heated, but that's part of football.
That's football, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it's that sort of respect element that we want. You know, we're trying to, because we've got a young side, we don't want them to get to the point where they're, you know, not arseholes, but we want them
to say that.
respectfully. So that's just the way that we choose to do it. And it might work, it might not work, but we're always learning.
What really keeps you awake at night running the first team?
My biggest thing is the mistakes that we make with being a young side. So we've deliberately gone down the route of choosing a young side. But with that, there comes, I wouldn't say problems, but challenges. You know, that from time to time, they're going to be inconsistent. They're going to make errors. Communication necessarily isn't always the best. And player reliability is another big one. I think even from, like, I'm only 30, but even sort of like my generation, I would travel to the end of the earth to go and play football, whether that meant missing 4 days of work or whatever. I think the sort of the cultural shift with the younger players now is more like the opposite. So the further that you've got to travel, the less that they want to play. I wouldn't say all, but most want to play with their friends rather than pushing the level and really pushing themselves. And it's all just, I don't know whether it's the love of the game or what the answer is really, but there's definitely a shift in sort of millennial focus on football and especially local football. And that's probably what keeps me awake the most, because I'm so passionate and I want everyone to give as much as what I'm giving. And I have to sometimes think, well, actually, this isn't the case with a lot of people. And I can't put my expectations of myself onto other people all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the biggest thing that keeps me awake, because I want that so much, but you can't expect everyone to have your mindset. So, and that's one of the biggest things I've probably learned in the short time of doing men's football, really. You know, you are we're ultimately, we're paying these people tens and 20 pounds. We're not paying them hundreds of pounds a week to play for Holsworthy Football Club. So we have to be a little bit realistic as well. They've all got jobs. They've all got lives they need to lead. And sometimes expectation can be quite high on players, you know, and performance levels and stuff like that, when, you know, they have got lots of other things to juggle as well. So, yeah, I would say that's probably one of the biggest things that sort of keeps me up and keeps me.
Yeah. I see the challenges of someone who's a bit older than you of managing people that are younger than me. And it's the thing that keeps me a bit awake at night, amongst many other things at the moment. But how you can get in touch with them, sort of thing. It's a completely different attitude to me and life. It is very, I can't imagine what it'd be like in a football scenario.
Yeah,
it's the reserves. Sorry, Ryan, go on.
Yeah, it is very difficult, and I think that is why there are less grassroots football teams now, because of the commitment levels and everything. I'm not so sure if it's filtered down to sort of like your area yet, but there's a lot of local teams to sort of like Holsworthy level that would have sort of three teams, even sort of village sides. Mm-hmm. They're down to one and struggling to get a team out, and you know, it does affect eventually. It filters on up to sort of our level.
But you guys have reinstated your reserves this year.
Yes.
How important is that for a club like yours?
Yes, it's massive. We were operating with a squad of about 20 last year. And to leave four or five out with no football at a weekend, again, only adds to that problem of commitment as well, and trying to get them and keep them interested. We've now got that opportunity that if someone's coming back from an injury, or, you know, if they're not quite in form, we can drop them back to the second team. They can play at a sort of a lesser level, but under our guidance, and get their confidence back up, get their fitness up, get whatever they need for a couple of weeks to then push themselves to come back up into our team. Which we had a couple of players here last year that were sort of caught sort of on the peripheries, like not fit, but then couldn't get fit because they were on the bench, couldn't get any game time. And then when we gave them game time, they weren't ready. And that sort of brought its own problem, really, with having one side. So having that reserve team now has really given us that platform to be able to work with those players and get the best out of them ultimately, and keep them playing football.
Yeah, well, you had a good 2022 start though, didn't you? I always kept saying on the blog that you were unbeaten for, was it until the day, the 2 days after the semi-final that went into extra time and penalties when you got beat at Brixham, I think. But so you managed to get through that quite well this year.
Yeah, I mean, we had a really good run from January. I think it was April that we eventually lost. And some really good draws and wins along the way. That Brixham game came as sort of a game too early for us, really. We had a game, as you say, on the Thursday night that went to 120 minutes in penalties, and then to try and play second in the table at their place on the Saturday was almost impossible.
Could you imagine what Jurgen Klopp would go like if he had to do that? I'll pick on Jurgen.
Yeah, unbelievable. You can only imagine it, couldn't you? So it was just too much, and we had nothing, to be honest. Even when we rocked up, we had the goalkeeper wasn't very well either. It was just kind of a combination of everything that was working against us on that day. And then we sort of had a little bit of a slump towards the end of that season until that final.
You know, I still haven't seen the goals from that final. Is it true that Jed did get a hat-trick? I can't believe this.
Yeah, hat-trick, yeah, absolutely. And to be fair, all very well taken goals.
And Morgan got the first, didn't he?
Yeah, Morgan got the first.
I think I've seen that one. I've seen that goal.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's left now. We don't talk to him. Talk about him now. So what are your aims for this season? I noticed, for example, that the Western League is expanding next year to two Step 5 divisions.
Yeah. So
how does that impact on you guys? And what do you think is going to happen to Step 6 next year? Sort of lots of questions in one there, but
yeah,
your aims, first of all.
So... Yeah, I mean, the aim for us is just to stay where we finished last season, really. Anywhere around the mid-table will be absolutely fine, and I think we'll be comfortably in that sort of area. I know we've sort of had a bit of a ropey start, but we have tried to embed a lot of players, a lot of new faces, and a different way of playing because of those new faces. So it's not just going to happen overnight. It will take time, but I'm confident that, you know, come May, we'll be in a very good position in the table. And that's the main thing for us, really, is just to continue at those sorts of levels. I mean, with the leagues changing, I think what they're trying to do is make two Western leagues, North and a South, because the Bristol teams were moaning about having to come down to the sort of the darkest depths of Cornwall, which is, you know, fair enough. And then I think they're making three peninsula leagues. I think one's a North, a Central, and a Southern version, or a East, a West, and a North, which is why Bridport have come in for this season, because I think they're going to be embedded into sort of like the North side of that peninsula league. So the top five teams, I believe, in both of the peninsula leagues will get automatic promotion to the Western League, providing that their ground facilities are of suitable nature for that level. And then beyond that, I think it will just drop back. If your ground doesn't suit, then they'll go to 6, 7, 8, wherever it needs to be to get the teams that are in that league with the suitable facilities, really. So, yeah, I mean, we're not aiming to go to the Western League at the moment. It would be a step way too far for us at this moment in time. It's not to say we don't want to get there, but at this moment in time, it's not a step. It's not where we want to be. Mm. You know, we're here to be sustainable and the club to be in a position long term to be in that league. But at the moment, it's about sustaining where we are, and continue to develop the lads that we've got at the club at the moment.
So, what cup competitions do you go into as a club? Obviously, you've got the Torrington one, which you won last year.
Yeah, so we go into the Torridge Cup, which is the one that we won last year. Yeah. We go into the St. Luke's Bowl, which I believe Biddeford won last year. And we go into the Walter C. Parsons, who are the sponsors of our league. So it's basically a big league cup, so East and West.
And you've got
Elburton
you've got in there?
Yeah, we've got Elburton in the Walter C. Parsons, and we've got Plymouth Marjohns in the St. Luke's Bowl. The Torridge Cup hasn't been drawn yet, I don't think.
Both teams you've beaten this year?
Both teams we've beaten this year, yeah.
Oh, okay. But you can't go in the Vars, you told me previously.
No, can't go in the Vars, and we can't enter the FA Cup because our pitch dimensions are too narrow and our railings and the stand are too close to the side of the pitch.
It fascinates me, this. Tony, the secretary at Phoenix, talks about ground dimensions and our teams have passed all the time. Someone told me one, the grounds didn't get step four status because their pathway down to the pitch wasn't wide enough. I mean, it sounds real jobs worth stuff to me.
Yeah, but anyway. It's about 6 inches as well, so it's not like we're talking miles. It's about 6 inches. It's the same. Our pitch is the same size as Highbury, so it was all right for Arsenal to be in the FA Cup, but Holsworthy, unfortunately not.
I never liked Highbury's pitch. The last time I went to Highbury with Millwall, we won. Which leads me on to, I always do a Millwall misery moment on the podcast. Everyone talks about the good times, and I prefer to focus on people being miserable. You're a Swindon fan. What's been your biggest misery moment as a Swindon fan?
I think the whole time I've spent being a Swindon fan has been a bit of a misery, to be honest. But to narrow it down, I was going to go with the Millwall defeat and the old famous Charlie Austin miss, but I didn't want to give you the pleasure of enjoying that one. So.
I was in the United States when that happened. I was in my mother-in-law's guest house, having paid $3.50 to watch it on Fox Soccer. Can you believe it?
Honestly, I'll never forget that day. But I was there, unfortunately. But I would have to say my biggest Swindon misery is probably the playoff final defeat to Preston in 2015. Because I went there fully expecting us to roll Preston over. We had a really good side at the time. Lots of players who are now playing Championship and have made a bit of a career for themselves. And that was just off the back of we had a really good side and it was very disappointing. We ended up losing 4-0. Jermaine Beckford scored a hat-trick. I'll never forget that. And I can't remember who else. I think it's something Huntington or something like that scored the other one. I can't remember his name now.
Can you honestly go to a game like that thinking you're going to win? I've never gone to a game like that ever thinking my team is going to win it. Ever.
Yeah, I generally thought we were going to win it. We had a really good side. We beat Sheffield United in the previous round, who were fancied. And Yeah, we had a really good side at the time, but yeah, they didn't turn up. A lot of them had been offered pre-contracts to go to league, to the Championship and the Premier League and stuff like that. So I just don't think they were really asked at the end of it. It was a bit gutting, to be honest.
Probably in my bathroom light going on and off in the back, and this is professional stuff. So just to sort of wrap up, you've got Newton Abbott Spurs on Saturday, is that correct?
Yeah, Newton Abbott Spurs on Saturday.
And they've had a couple of good results, didn't they? Beat Oakhampton, or was it Brixham they beat the other week?
They did beat Oakhampton the other week, yeah.
What do you reckon?
We went and watched them the first game of the season that was played on a Friday night, and yeah, they're very sharp. Their manager's a really good young manager as well. They play really good football, so it's going to be a real big challenge for us. But we tend to play better against the sides that there's a little bit more pace in the game. When we're sort of asked to put the pace into the game, we tend to struggle. If you look back at a lot of our results last season, the better ones came against the teams at the top. The tempo and the speed in the game really suits us. So I'm hoping we're going to give them a really good game tomorrow, and we need to get back to sort of winning ways, even if it's just picking up a point. We need to stop the little bit of a rot that we're on, and get a bit of confidence through the side. Again, as I've mentioned, we've got a few players out. One's at a wedding and the other one's still aching from Wednesday night. So that kind of sums up the problems.
still aching. Good grief. I played cricket. If I didn't play the day after because I ached, I think I'd get mercilessly taunted by my teammates.
And
I did ache.
So, I mean, that again is part of the challenges that you face. But it is what it is. You can't use it as an excuse. You just got to crack on. And, you've got a squad there for a reason. So we've got to use them. And, I fully entrust them to be able to go and get a result there. Result at home tomorrow.
And what does it do for morale and things when you see people like Ollie Bray get sort of picked up by Manchester United's under-21s to train? Is that sort of like really fulfilling for you?
Yeah, absolutely. That's half the reason we do it. It's the half the reason we choose the youngsters, because we want to give them a platform to be able to go and push on. And, Ollie had sort of a couple of months out of not playing football at all last season. And with the help of Tom, we managed to encourage him to come out to Holsworthy and, really start enjoying playing football again. And we think we've done that, and full credit to him for taking that step. It's no easy jump, and he's done really well, bless him. And yeah, I wish him the best of luck, to be fair. And if we can encourage more players along that sort of pathway, and get them to play a high level, even if it's only a couple of leagues, that's an achievement in itself, and we'll be over the moon for them if we can get them to do that. That's ultimately the goal for us.
That's all great. All right. Well, cheers, Ryan, for making the time. Is there anything you want to add,
I think we've covered pretty much everything, haven't we? I'll be interested to hear it back. But yeah, I know. Thank you for the questions, and hopefully I've answered them the way.
As I keep saying to everybody with the non-league stuff, and certainly with Holsworthy and both yourselves and Phoenix, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you and the guys at the clubs. Just because it does show a different side of football that I used to, frankly, turn my nose up at when I was a season ticket holder and going home and away at Millwall. It's like the only thing non-league football was to do was to shame you if you got knocked out by one of them in the FA Cup, which in my lifetime, Woking and Slough have both done. I wasn't at Slough, but I was at Woking. It's been completely different. I mean, I'm going to an FA Cup tie tomorrow, first qualifying round one, which I'm healthily excited for, which makes me a bit worried, really. But no, really looking forward to seeing you guys down in October. And so hopefully we can pick up, in a month's time, see how the things have gone with Holsworthy in the interim. My last question for you is, what do you make of a London supporter following Holsworthy?
Yeah, no, to be fair, it's brilliant. And all of our lads have well and truly bought into it. They always look at your podcasts and listening to them. We've had them on in the car going to games. We've had them on the bus going to games. We've had people reading out the blog. yeah, it's been a breath of fresh air, to be honest with you. And yeah, I'm so glad that you've taken the time to do that. We appreciate it as much as you might appreciate it. Every little bit of support that we can get as a club is fantastic.
Well, I'll make sure the badge is kept safe on the move house. There's definitely
it
looks like the first game I'm possibly going to go to is Ivy Bridge away or a top. Oh my goodness!
Yeah, that could be an interesting one.
Oh well, that'll be in October anyway. So I'll see you. But no, thanks very much. Let's hope this has worked properly. I say it's there's been a little bit of sound effects in the back, but I don't have a soundproof studio in my house, and it's just an amateur hour job. But no, really good. Thanks for that. It's been fascinating to hear from you.
No, it's been a pleasure.
All right, mate. Well, speak to you soon.
Yeah, take care.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye bye. Bye.
Well, that was excellent, and thanks to Ryan for his answers to the questions I put. So just to get under the skin of a Step 6 manager to work out exactly what happens in the club, found that really fascinating. A couple of apologies for the sound quality from my perspective. I forgot to switch my microphone on. Never mind. But I hope the sound quality comes through. Secondly, not quite figured out the podcast or software yet, so we were straight into the interview. There is no intro. So this is, of course, Dog on a Hill production in association with Dimitri Media. My thanks for Ryan for being the volunteer. Sorry if there's any sound effects in the background. I've not got a soundproof studio, but it's been a really interesting conversation, and I hope to have a few more with him. And I hope you've all found this interesting too, and I hope this podcast goes really well. So that's it. Thanks for listening, and hopefully I'll record a podcast again next week. Cheerio, bye.